I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Welcome, welcome to Susie Larson Live. I'm always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, if you listen often enough, you know that every month we have our good friend Dr. Troy Spurl on the show to answer your questions about health and the healing process. Today, we're going to talk about how to get a vision for what health and healing might look like. The power of vision. What it means to get a vision. I want you to just even picture yourself a year from now. What would a healthier, healed you look like? Well, this isn't to be confused with a new age mindset or the power of positive thinking. We're going to kind of make the distinction between those in just a little bit. But there is something very powerful and redemptive about saying, Lord, give me a vision for what's possible, for what restoration might look like in my life. The phone lines are going to open up here in just a couple of minutes, and you can even text right now with your health and healing questions. So as you know, we'll start out the conversation talking a little bit about this, but no question is off topic. So you text and call. But one thing I want to ask you, because this often happens, is the calls flood in the second half, and the texts flood in the second half, and then we can't get to all of them. So somebody's got to kick us off. Don't be shy. Text in your question, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. In fact, I wonder if we can pull open those phone lines even now. You may have to hold for just a couple minutes while Dr. Troy and I chat. A quick caveat, Dr. Troy isn't here to diagnose you over the airwaves, and his advice is not meant to take the place of your doctor's advice. So always consult your physician before making changes to your life. But what we want to do is show you what's possible. We want to give you a broader perspective of what health and healing might look like. Quick announcement, it is now Pastor Appreciation Month. And if you, I pray that you appreciate your pastor, but if you want to nominate them, they can be entered to win some incredible prizes through Faith Radio. And already people have nominated their pastors. You go on our website, myfaithradio.com. You might even see your pastor's name there. And it's so fun to see some of them nominated multiple times. But make sure you let your pastor know how much you love and appreciate them. Theirs is a thankless job sometimes, you know? All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Spurl is CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. He loves God, and he's passionate about health and the healing process. He's got a brilliant mind and a great heart, and we sure love him here at Faith Radio. Dr. Troy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Looking forward to our conversation. So what do you got for us for a verse today? What are you thinking about?
First Thessalonians 5:18, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you.
Say more.
For me, it requires faith to have that picture of just what we're about to receive when we get to heaven. It's a faith walk. It's a faith journey. And so the gratitude, by displaying the faith, we have this gratitude for what we haven't yet received. And one of the things we're talking about today is vision. And it's when people are suffering in life, I want them to have gratitude for what they're about to receive in their healing before it happens. And we see this all the time. It really is a faith walk. It's unwavering faith to heal. And so that's part of the journey. And I just wanted to share a few stories of some patients that we were working with, and I may have mentioned Pius. He's one of my favorite. He's no longer with us. He's with his father right now. But he came in years ago, and he had a farming accident. Beautiful gentleman from North Dakota, and he couldn't walk and was paralyzed by this farming accident. And I asked him, "Can you see yourself walking in your head?" And he kind of closed his eyes, and when he opened his eyes, he teared up a little bit and realized he couldn't picture himself walking. So then I said, "I don't think I can treat you right now." But before he left, I grabbed his wife, pulled her aside, and I said, "Can you do me a favor? Can you just videotape?" This is back in the days of videotape for the young kids out there. They had these little cassettes that you recorded stuff on.
That's another show.
But yeah, anyway. Completely different show. And I said, "I want you to videotape your neighbor walking in his fields."
Your
husband's field.
And your husband's pants.
Husband's pants from the waist down. And I want you to tell him to picture his face on that body, if you will. And then I told him the same thing. And I said, if you can see yourself walking with your whole body in your fields, give me a call and we'll get started. And 3 months went by and I got a very excited call, and he could see himself. He can visualize it in his head. It took 3 months of him practicing every day, watching that video, and then he called. And so then we went to work. And the long and the short of it was he was in his mid-70s, and within 2 years he got back walking. And that was not supposed to be possible for him at all. He had a spinal cord injury. He worked really hard. It was still an abnormal gait. He needed some assistance, but he did it. And he worked hard. He's one of those people that pushed me. And he had unwavering faith that he would walk. He's the one that had to keep telling me that it's possible. Mm. And so that visual, that vision that he held in his head, that picture of him walking was very, very important. And we see that with a lot of our patients. And I think I was mentioning to you how I just had someone who was just so weak, so fatigued, that she couldn't think of the words. The words couldn't come to her mind when she wanted to pray. She was so weak and fatigued, she couldn't pray. And so in that moment, when we were talking, I just said, a picture's worth 1,000 words, just pray in pictures. What I meant by that is just thank God for the healings he's about to do for you, and just send him a picture. God knows your heart. God knows what that means. When you send him a picture, that's 1,000 words, probably 10,000 to God. And so she was able to do that, and it gave her hope that she found a different way to pray. And when she has the strength to say the words out loud, she screams them. But when she doesn't, she prays in pictures now.
You know, I've shared this on the show, but many years ago when I first contracted Lyme, I was an aerobics instructor, but I wasn't certified. So I just taught at a local club. I taught high-low and step and some strength classes. Then I got devastatingly ill, and I was so sick. Young mom of 3 boys, the doctor said, you should go to a support group for Lyme patients. Now, some people need that, but I was battling fear. And Lyme is so unpredictable and weird and different on everybody. I thought the last thing I need to do is hear everybody else's horror stories. It'll just send me into the ditch of despair. So what I'm going to do instead is study for a national certification for fitness, you know. And I actually went to my health club because I was on a leave of absence, and I'd sit in the shadows on this little bike. I could barely do anything. But the gal that was teaching my class, I pictured myself. I didn't look at her head. I pictured myself teaching those step combos. When they're putting me through another MRI, you're in there for 45 minutes. I'm doing combinations in my head. When I studied, this manual was so thick, and it had messed, the Lyme had messed up my brain. The short-term memory was some almost gone. So I would study these notes. The next day I would go and see where I had left off and have zero recollection of what I had just studied. And I would come out crying. I'm like, yeah, I don't have the brain for this. And Kev says, yes, you do, go back in there. So I had to study 5 times harder probably than the average person. And it was like, I don't know, several hour test. And I got 97% on it. And it was such a massive accomplishment for me. Yeah. But what it did is put a fight in my heart. And I want to make a distinction here so you all know we're not talking about a new age mindset or the power of positive thinking. But science, really, apart from faith, is proving that there's a lot to be said about getting a vision, about redemptive positive thoughts, so to speak. And that's why so many in the non-biblical world have latched onto it, because they've actually gotten results. I mean, people who don't have faith, who picture themselves well, will fare better than those who are quite sure they're going to die, right?
Absolutely, yeah. People with cancer who have a positive outlook on their treatments have a greater survival rate. And so we see that all the time. There's a lot of research out there. They just don't give the glory to God,
exactly,
which is the problem. So,
it's still a truth. You know, and the brain science thing is so fascinating. I've watched a number of testimonies. The reason this matters, and we want to make the distinction, is the power of positive thinking does make a difference in your life. And the power of neuroplasticity, which is what God did in our brain so that we can, our brain can be retrained, is a God-given thing. But if you misuse it and you're doing it apart from God, you are subject to deceit, of being deceived in a significant way. But Doc, I want to just give a couple of these studies that I learned about this past year and have you comment on them, and then we'll go to break. But there was a study done with 3 groups of basketball players. One group, they just shot 3 throws over and over and over and over again. The next group were in a room watching a video of someone shooting 3 throws, 3.3, free throws. Yeah. And then the third group just said, practice whatever drill you want. And when it was all done, the first group increased their skill exponentially, let's say 20 points. And the second group were 18 points. They were almost as good as the first group just because of the repetitive rehearsing and visualizing doing the actual activity without even doing it.
Yeah.
And the third group knew no gains at all because it was so random and there was no purpose to it. One other study I thought was so interesting. A notable actor, I can't remember his name. I think I do, but I'm just
so not so notable.
Yeah, no, he is, but I feel like I probably shouldn't say it. But anyway, he was studying for a part, and the actual, it was based on a true story. The main character had OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. So this actor immersed himself in this guy's life. He just studied his nuance. He studied OCD, and he became so part of the character. Once the film was over, he actually had OCD. And it took, I think, 6 months to overcome because his brain had been retrained to become obsessive compulsive.
Yes. Yeah. And so just in that example, we can do the exact same thing in the opposite. So when we're told to guard our thoughts, this is part of it. So our thoughts can work against us or for us. There's that much of an influence over the entire body. The basketball study that you're referencing, they just visualized, and that visualization was almost as good as the muscle memory part of this. If you did both, then you would actually come out of things much, much further ahead. Golfers do that with every golf shot. And it kind of struck me as funny as I was reading. I've read a lot of those studies over the years. Since 2015, there's been numerous that have come out. It struck me as funny that professional athletes will visualize catching the football, hitting their golf shot in, on each and every swing or each and every play type of scenario. But we don't do that with our own life in a daily walk. And we can. Mm-hmm. We're allowed to. We're allowed to have a conversation with God and do the same thing. Get that visual in our head. The book I wrote 22 years ago, I talked about that as far as my own personal health when I was going through health challenges. I've had a visualization. The first exercise I could do that I could actually do was a visualization of me lifting a broom at one point when I had lost use of my arms. And so that was my first step in recovery from my personal health stuff. So the visualization was a key to the recovery. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it drives the physical output. But the opposite is true as well. When you have negative self-condemnation or any type of automatic negative thoughts, that shuts the body down and puts us into a depressive nature, a depressive state. Harvard has studied a lot on this, and although they don't give the glory to God, they report repeatedly that happiness increases, joy increases, physical output increases. So we're able to do more. So there's less just slowness of life, if you will. We're actually more capable of handling and managing the stressors of life.
We're going to pause here. So the whole point, if you can see this, is, you know, the Bible even says, without a vision, people cast off restraint. Without a vision, people perish. What if, because we are filled with the Spirit of God, we have the living Word of God, in the redemptive way, renewed our minds to say, Lord, give me a vision for my next place of promise. Give me a vision for what a healthier, healed me might look like. You partner with God. You do your work. You let God do His work. What might happen? I agree with you, Doc, that, you know, if the secular world has grabbed hold something that God is the one, this originated from God, but they're practicing it and seeing results, and we're taking our hands off of it because the New Agers have hijacked it. That's just not right. So we want to talk about redeeming and renewing your thoughts. Plus, we'll take your questions as well. I see a few texts have come in. 877-933-2484. Phone lines are now open. So now, don't wait anymore. I want to hear from you. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live. If you listen often enough, you know I have our good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl, on the show. He's founder, CEO of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. People come from miles around to see him, and he joins us every month to answer your health and healing questions. And we open the show talking about just getting a vision for what health and healing might look like. I just got to say, before we get to some of these texts, it changed everything for me, Doc, because I could be prone to fear and anxiety, but I am a fighter and a contender. Yeah. So to have a picture of what I'm going for is what kept me from distractions. And I would imagine that's just the case for anybody, because you think scripture says without a vision, people cast off self-restraint. It's like, if I don't have a picture in front of me, why do I practice self-discipline? Maybe speak to that if you would.
Yeah, it's an innate way that God heals us. So when you get a cut, you don't have to tell your immune system to go heal the cut or the wound. When you've been wounded and God has put in place ways for you to actually come out of that wound. So a lot of the healing occurs. It's different than a cut, but it's the vision that helps set everything else in the cascade of chemical reactions that occur inside our body to promote the healing part of it. So the vision is very much the beginning stage of a wound healing. And doesn't matter if it's a true physical wound, a chemical wound, or an emotional wound, having that vision of what you want your life to be like and what you're asking God to give you is a big part of it. So, and if you don't have necessarily something specific that you're suffering from health-wise, it doesn't matter. It's still a tool there that we can use. And to your point earlier in the earlier segment, this tool is being studied by our universities and scientists, but they're misusing it. They don't get it because they don't understand God. So it's kind of like giving them a Ferrari and they're driving it like it's a stick shift that they've never driven before, and they're grinding the gears and everything and saying, oh, what a vehicle, and they don't even know.
Hmm. Wow. I remember reading a story of a woman who was in the hospital, and she needed a surgery, but it was a simple single-day surgery, and it was a common surgery, but surgery is surgery. But she was freaking out with, you know, her adult kids were there, and she's like, I'm going to die. I know it. I'm going to die. Well, the doc comes in. He's like, what's all the commotion? And they're like, doc, she's afraid of this surgery. And she's like, I'm going to die. So he puts the clipboard. He just drops it on the bed. And he goes, you're going to have to find yourself another doctor. And she said, what? And he says, I do these surgeries all day long. But he said, if you think you're going to die, I don't need that on my watch. So find yourself another doctor. Yeah. And I thought, wow, because he talked about the power of the, yeah. I need you in this with me. I bet you feel like that all the time. Like you can only do so much. Right?
Yes, exactly right. And when we start working with some patients that need a major shift in their health, we try and talk them out of working with us because they have to be so invested as much as we are. Because earlier in my career, many times I found I was more invested than the patient. Mm-hmm. I would work on weekends. I'd work on nights trying to figure out what's the best path for them to take. And then they'd come in and say, I didn't listen to anything that you recommended, mm-hmm. or they didn't follow through and they weren't as invested as I was. So we want to make sure they're on board. And we just noticed that the people who were 100% honest, they were accountable for their results, and they would report whether it was good or bad. We navigated together. It was always a team approach to getting people better. Those are the majority of our successes, not the people that come in and say, you need to fix me. Mm. And I say, okay, I need to put you on this diet. And they're like, whoa, that's got broccoli. I don't do broccoli.
Exactly. I want a gluten-full diet.
Yes.
Anyway, okay. So this one, question for Dr. Troy. My 10-year-old daughter has ADHD, has genetic testing showing that she has homogenous, I'm saying that wrong, MTHFR mutation. How do you say it?
MTHFR.
Oh, let's just
methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase.
Of course. Yeah. I was going to say that. But anyway, we supplement her with methylfolate, but I'm wondering if we also need to cut out all folic acid out of her diet. Is it good enough to just have her supplemented with the methylfolate? What do you say?
So, yeah, the methylfolate many times is good enough. A lot of times you do need the B12 vitamins with that, the methylcobalamin, not the cyano. And then the folate, you don't necessarily need to pull folate out of the diet because it's not... the problem is people with that genetic disorder don't convert a percentage of their folate to the active form. Now, the biggest thing that helps with folate production is the bacteria in your GI tract. So more importantly is the probiotics and the dysbiosis, making sure there isn't any problems with the bacteria in the gut. So always start with the methyl folate. The other methylators in the body, things like SAMe, can help. Also, a lot of people with, a lot of kids with ADHD also potentially have iodine issues or another genetic scenario called COMT. So if there's any trouble sleeping or anxiety that starts to creep in there, then they have a hard time detoxifying from their own adrenaline and dopamine.
Hmm.
So
wow. And that's
so
totally treatable.
That. If they 100% could, treatable, yes.
Wow. If they could get to the bottom of that.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
So keep working the you don't need to pull the folate out of the diet unless it's a super high. That's pretty rare though. Normally when we change the bacteria and supplement with the other methyl vitamins, it usually works pretty well.
Hmm. Dr. Troy and Susie, wondering, I love that she included me.
Yes.
So this means she wants
Dr.
my opinion.
Dr. Susie and Troy.
So after Troy answers, I'll give you my thoughts as well. Just kidding. Wondering your thoughts on bioidentical hormones. What say you?
So there is definitely room for bioidentical hormones. You don't want to be on them for a long time. So there is a value there. And I, though, like to get to the root cause, why the need for the hormones in the first place. So if we're talking about a menopausal or premenopausal scenario, usually that's because we have deficiencies in other areas. For example, the adrenal glands have to take over for the ovaries at menopause as far as producing estrogen. But not a lot of people know that the biggest challenge for the hormones is a deficiency in iodine, especially if you're in the Midwest, because iodine comes from the ocean. And so we don't, our soil tends to be very depleted here in the Midwest. And iodine is actually the number one deficiency worldwide.
Wow.
And most people think of iodine and thyroid, they go together, but which is true. We have other tissues in our body that also have iodine. The ovaries store iodine. The uterus and female organs store iodine. The mucosa of the stomach stores iodine. And then even the cerebral spinal fluid to clear out the brain stores iodine. And really, we don't get enough iodine in general. The waves, when they crash on the ocean, on the beach, I should say, the spray sends up iodine in the droplets, and then it falls down in the soils close to the coast. If you don't have that, there's nothing that we get iodine from except for salt. And it's about 100 times deficient for the need to balance the hormones.
Wow. And we've also, a lot of people have traded iodized salt for sea salt.
Yeah.
So that probably hasn't helped as much, even though you don't get a lot of iodine in salt.
The sea salt actually has iodine
in it. Oh, it does.
Okay. Yeah, it does. It's not fortified. It has minerals. So the sea salt is still good, but it's still not enough because we've stopped salting things in general. And so for a lot of the environmental things that can throw our hormones off, like pesticides or things that mimic estrogen, they need to be detoxified out of the body. And there's a secret enemy there that destroys our iodine. It displaces it, and it's in white bread and a lot of the baked goods.
Wow.
And that might be a whole other show just on, on bromide. But
wow.
They made a horrific change in our food in the 1980s based off bad, bad science in the 1960s.
My goodness. So we're ready to go to break here, but just quick question. And if it's not a quick answer, you can get it on the other side. But so if it's deficient in iodized salt, is it iodine drops, or what's the way to get it?
Iodine and iodide. So there's two different scenarios.
Okay.
You need both of them. And generally you need higher doses of it, and eating from the sea helps the fish and the seaweed.
When we come back, I want to talk a bit about chronic fatigue syndrome. I know that comes up a lot in the fall, and it's interesting because sometimes doctors will tell you to drink a whole cup of salt water if your adrenals are depleted. Very interesting. Plus, I see a few more questions coming in. So I told you not to wait till the back half of the show. Well, here we are. I'm not scolding you, but it's time for you to call 877-933-2484. More with Dr. Troy in just a moment. This song. At least one person in the studio is dancing with me, and it's not Dr. Troy.
It
I'll
is
just
not
tell
me.
You. I think he's bopping his pinky. Maybe. I don't know. Thanks for tuning into Sizzy Larson Live. You know, there's something about great music, and I think, you know what, especially in this day with so much unrest, I have an assignment for you. Get some music on today and dance. I'm telling you, it'll do wonders for your soul. But I digress. We're not talking about that today. We're taking your questions about health and the healing process. The phone lines are open. The text line is open. I see a number of texts, and we'll address those in a moment. 877-933-2484. So before the break, you were saying that many people have an iodine deficiency, and even iodized salt is kind of a deficient way to get the iodine we need. So let's start there, because one listener said, how do you get that supplement iodine? Say more about it.
So the first thing is, again, our soils are pretty deficient, and one of the sneaky things that, if you look at the periodic table, which I don't know how often you look at it, but I recommend looking at that because it's a lot of information there. If you look at iodine, it's number 53 on the chart, and everything in that column above it is what's called a halide. So they all can replace each other is the point. So chlorine, fluoride, and bromide can all replace iodine, displace it from the body. The problem is bromide in particular can't be used like iodine. So it displaces it, and then all of a sudden you're deficient in the iodine. And bromide, in the 1980s, they started putting it in all of wheat flour, all of our baked goods. So people are eating white bread in particular, but baked bread and pastas and things like that are filling up on bromide, displacing their iodine. And we now know, especially women over the age of 40, a large percentage, over 60%, have thyroid issues.
So an iodine deficiency can create thyroid issues, among other things.
It can create severe iodine deficiency can cause cancer because of how of the inability to protect the DNA. And so that's ovarian, cervical, uterine cancer, breast cancer. Iodine deficiency is known to be the primary cause of dense breast tissue or fibrocystic breast disorders, polycystic ovarian syndrome. A lot of female disorders are basically iodine deficiencies because of some of the other things that we're consuming that displace it. And then we have to eat that much more. And then you have to have a few cofactors working in there. If you don't have glutathione, which is the major antioxidant in the body that also gets displaced or used up because of all the toxins in our environment, then hydrogen peroxide builds up within the thyroid. And then if hydrogen peroxide gets too high, it damages an enzyme called TPO, which we now know is called Hashimoto's. So, so if we have enough glutathione and we are converting our iodine properly in the thyroid, then we're good. We're fine. But many people don't have that.
So should anybody, I mean, you know, any woman who's, you know, 50s and above, would it do them well to take iodine? So how do you get it?
I'm not going to say take an iodine. So Lugol's iodine is a high-dose iodine, and I would recommend getting tested, doing an iodine loading test. If you are interested in learning about it, there's a great book called Iodine, Why You Need It, by Dr. Brownstein. So he's a medical doctor who helped set up that particular test to see how deficient we are, because the current testing for it is very, very poor to actually give you an idea of your body's reserves. It's not just the thyroid. So a lot of women with endometriosis and other problems, iodine is a part of that conversation.
So a question here, if most people are deficient and that's too potent of a supplement, isn't there some kind of low level that would be just good insurance for us to add to our...
Yeah, so you can start with just an iodine. A lot of companies have just a lower level iodine, but the reality is it's a weird scenario, but you have to shut down the reflex so the hydrogen peroxide doesn't build up. You have to at some point take some higher doses, and that'll be for the people who are just severely deficient. So if you have an active female disorder, polycystic ovarian syndrome or something like that, or fibrocystic breast, then you probably need the higher dose. The test you can order online. It's in the book. So it's a fairly cheap test, $74 to $140. And you can find that information out yourself.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Anonymous caller is lactose intolerant, had a bout of diarrhea that sent her to the ER. She's now gluten-free, egg-free, lactose-free, but still dealing with bouts of diarrhea. She's also in menopause. What can she do to prevent the bouts of diarrhea without taking a probiotic? Would taking a probiotic help? Sorry about that.
So great question. Most likely we're dealing with a leaky gut scenario. And so with leaky gut, probiotics are one thing. With menopause, if that's triggered anything, we can start to see the brain stops supporting the digestive tract and your stomach pH starts to change. So if you're on a proton pump inhibitor, that may have set up the whole scenario too. But we need a proper stomach acid to actually digest the proteins properly. If your stomach acid is not high, then you're more prone to the bad bacteria and parasites that we get exposed to in all foods, and then that can cause a lot of the bowel reaction. I would treat it as if there is a leaky gut scenario and what's called SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, where you need to clean up those two scenarios. To stop the diarrhea right away, you can take a binder like activated charcoal. Activated charcoal will kind of soak up, if you will, a lot of I don't want to give it to it. This is where you stop visualizing. I want everyone to stop visualizing as
he
I go through this
process. He does
carry
a poop chart in his wallet. Let's just say it out loud. Okay, keep going.
But we need to have the bowels be a little bit better. So we want them on the 3 or 4 on the poop chart scale, and they need to be a little more solid. So a binder can do that, like activated charcoal.
And, you know, another thing about the SIBO is if there's an app, an IBS app, that has the low FODMAP diet on it. And that's a good way to measure what foods you should have, what foods you shouldn't. And you can get over that.
Yes.
And you want to, because you'll feel much, much better if you do. So Philip from St. Louis Park was taking iodide, measuring it on his arm to know how much to take. What's the best way to measure the amount of iodide you need, and how does that relate to the amount of iodine we need?
Great question, because the iodide is converted to iodine in the thyroid if you have enough glutathione, hydrogen, and hydrogen peroxide. So you need enough of those other cofactors to convert it properly. But iodide is stored in different tissues like the breast. So the thyroid will be an iodine primary. The breast tissue will be iodide, so as far as storage. The skin test is how they used to do it, and it is accurate for the skin and the skin only. So the best thing to do is to get the iodine loading test, and then that'll tell you. For men, iodide is stored in the prostate. And so you can have prostate issues if your zinc and hydrochloric acid is not right and your iodide is not right. So it's actually even common for a lot of men to get thyroid disorders or iodide issues. You can't measure the two distinctly, but if you do the iodine loading test, they'll give you an idea of your deficiency. And you should never take iodide just by itself. You should always do a blend. Lugol's iodine has the right blend in there, and a lot of other companies do too.
All right. That's all right. Let's see here. Adrenal fatigue. We just have we have plenty of time. I see a lot of other texts coming in as well. I remember I went through adrenal fatigue, as you know. He treated me, but I have a friend who has a friend who had it, and the doctor told her to drink salt water every morning, and she said it helped her incredibly. Why would that be?
So salt water, number one, there's iodine in there, about a small amount usually, but it's the minerals. Our adrenal glands need proteins and minerals. So sodium and potassium are electrolytes and minerals that are high in salt, obviously. Salt is sodium chloride. And so we need those, especially sodium, we need that to help increase the energy of all our cells. All of our cells have what's called sodium-potassium pumps. And so in order for the cell to work, it'll exchange sodium and kick out potassium. And then that's what turns the cell on and keeps it going. Iodine is used for the thyroid. It's kind of like the key to start the engine of it. So sodium-potassium in the mineral salts is like turning on the light in the room so you can see what you're doing, basically.
Yeah, I think it's just a surprising remedy because docs have been anti-salt because of high blood pressure and different things, but there are scenarios where it actually does help. And maybe another day we'll talk more. It's been a long time since we've addressed adrenal fatigue. It's a different kind of tired. It's a wired, tired kind of feeling, and your battery's kind of low.
Yes.
All right, here's one. Dr. Troy and Susie, thanks so much for your passion for people, their physical health, and their spiritual health. I always enjoy your broadcast together. Wow, thank you so much for that. And the question today is in regard to my brother-in-law. 3.5 years ago was in an accident that left him paralyzed right there. That's just heartbreaking. Wow. He now lives in a senior living home. Without physical exercise, he has frequent stomach intestinal issues. He's currently taking quite amount of Beano to relieve gas and bloating issues. Is there a supplement that I could suggest that would be better for him? And Beano is basically a digestive enzyme, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's a good question. That's tough. I'm going to say supplement-wise, it's more than just that. I wish there was just one supplement you can give. But what I would say is You want to support this from two different directions. Now, the digestive system works based on how well the brain works. Your brain is what controls the digestive system. And so the digestive system is a muscle. It's a little different than the muscles of your arms and legs, but it's still a muscle. So the brain has to be nice and strong. So any type of brain exercise is going to be important for the brain part of it. So I'm going to talk to this in two different areas. One is feedback to the brain. And I'm going to use the analogy of the astronauts going into outer space. When astronauts go into outer space, they're very healthy. They're physically fit. They have to go through, pass a whole series of tests, but they can only stay in space for 2 years before they have to return down to Earth. The reason is there's no gravity in space. Without gravity, they can't use their muscles to feed back to the brain. Because when you push off to walk in space, you can go forever with one push. So our brain starts to decline. Within 2 years, they develop cognitive dysfunction on par with dementia and Alzheimer's, and they become very, very weak because of the lack of using your muscles. So my point is the brain starts to atrophy unless it gets some type of feedback. So even though there's a level of paralysis, there'll be something you can do to feed back to the brain. So sometimes using a massager to stimulate the muscles, or therapeutic TENS units or something like that to stimulate the muscles. Now, if the cause is at a certain level of the spinal cord or brainstem, that he may not get that feedback. So then you have to do other therapies. If you can't exercise your muscles by just having someone massage them or saying that feedback back to the brain, you can do eye movements all over the place. And eye movements require muscle function that will stimulate the brain. So it's almost like going to the gym, but you exercise your eyes in all the different quadrants to activate the brain. Massaging the stomach and increasing the blood flow to that area is still going to be very important. We will pull the stomach down. We will massage the valves of the stomach, and that helps increase blood flow and make the brain aware of that area. That will improve digestion as well. And then as far as supplements, you just have to support the digestive system, which means digestive enzymes and hydrochloric acid. A lot of times you need bile as well. So there are some products that have digestive enzymes, hydrochloric acid, and bile all in one digestive product.
Wow. Thank you for that. Wow. Pray that gives you some hope. We're going to pause here and we'll tackle more questions. And we opened with just a conversation about getting a vision for what health and healing might look like and how that's different from the power of positive thinking or from New Age mentality, really, where you kind of become your own God. We serve one God, capital G God. But you know what? We're fearfully and wonderfully made. He's the one who made our brain with something called neuroplasticity, where we actually can change our brain. In fact, our brain changes every day based on the most consistent thought patterns that we have, the things we tell ourselves. So good or bad, you can literally damage your brain with self-destructive thoughts, or you can awaken your brain and increase your capacity to learn when you think thoughts in line with God's thoughts. Isn't that amazing? So do you think he wants you to get a vision for what a healthier, healed you might look like? Absolutely, he does. Well, this listener says, what research or your opinion on tapping to the emotional freedom technique for visualizing healing? What is the research or your opinion on tapping or emotional freedom technique for visualizing healing? I'm not 100% sure if I know, but I think you do. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, having another fantastic conversation with our good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl. He is the CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. We've got one more segment left. If you want to call in and you're too shy to get on the air, you can just pass your message along and we'll try to tackle it. Got a few more texts to get to as well. 877-933-2484. So, Doc, we opened the show. This is what you wanted to talk about, is that really the power of visualization, which is not New Agey and it's not positive thinking. It's redemptive faith, getting a picture of what God might want to do. And this listener says, what's your research or your opinion on EFT, emotional freedom technique, for visualizing healing? What do you say?
So, number one, I will say there is a lot of validity as far as how it works. There is not a ton of research. There's more research on EMDR, which is a similar technique. But I will say this. years ago, the reason you first invited me on the show, Susie, was to talk about the story of the soldier. And it was the first time I had ever prayed about a patient and got an answer instantly. And it was very similar to EFT and to EMDR. Now, I had never heard of those things, but I was obedient as far as just listening to what was given to me and working with the patient. And he was in a frozen state and was able to start moving when we use this technique.
So I want you to picture his hands locked up, his feet locked up, his arms. He was basically kind of almost in a locked up fetal position for a long time. As a soldier, he experienced trauma on the battlefield, trauma with one of his sons, and was locked up. So, I mean, for those who didn't hear that story, it might be worth just giving us a quick recap.
The quick recap was he had run into a tent, knocked himself unconscious, and was recovering from a concussion when he found out his newborn baby son back home may not make it through the night. That mental and physical trauma, he woke up the next morning and was frozen stiff, just locked in. And he had been in that state for a year when his wife called me from Germany. That he was in Afghanistan at the time. And she was referred to the clinic and just said, I heard you're a problem solver. This is the scenario. And I said, sounds like an area of the brain called the basal ganglia. Get a PET scan and we can see. And I heard laughter. Apparently I was on the speakerphone and the doctors thought it was not a very accurate diagnosis. But I asked the wife just to pick up the phone, said, it sounds like the area of the brain called the basal ganglia. PET scans are very expensive. They may not want to do it, but if you get a PET scan, it'll either show I'm right or I'm not. And hung up, didn't think anything of it. And a year later, she called back and said they just got a PET scan. They thought you were nuts. They thought it was a virus or chemical warfare, and the PET scan shows basal ganglia. And the Army is sending him to your clinic in Minnesota. And I said, well, I knew what area of the brain it was. I didn't say I knew how to fix it. And so they sent him, and that's when I prayed, because I had no idea what I was in for. And when I prayed, God just said, check the cerebellum and keep checking. And so when I did that, got to that part of the neurologic exam, he started moving his fingers. And I asked his wife if he'd ever done that. And she said no. So we kept stimulating that area of the brain over and over again. And when you do the emotional freedom tapping or the EMDR, you're moving and exercising your eyes and stimulating points that go through the cerebellum, which all emotional and physical memory go through. And so, long story short, after a couple hours, 6 hours of doing this, he jumped up off the table and just walked out of the room. Hadn't moved like that in 2 years, clapped his hands, and we were all crying, of course, and stuff. And so I started looking at the other patients in my population who had this type of emotional, physical muscle memory, if you will. And it turns out we all do. We all have aspects of that. So I developed a technique that we affectionately call the clearings at our clinic. But when I went and I created a machine with the help of 3M, and when we went to file the patent, all of a sudden we found out there was a technique called EMDR, and emotional freedom technique came later. So we didn't even know those things existed. It's more in the psychological world that they've used them in the past, but there's actual some real science behind it, as far as just a purely mechanical feedback system to the muscle emotional memory part of the brain.
And so you've actually had patients come in and who've got their physiological issues, but the emotional issue is I can't live up to my wife's expectations.
Yep.
So give us, like, let's take that for an example. So you got a patient who feels like I'm a letter down, nothing I do is good enough. What would the impact be with that mindset? What would you do?
So with that, the thing is our brain saves all of those memories. And when you just say, if I were to have patient say their wife's name, we would check their physiology. If their muscles weaken, if we see a change, then we call that a trigger or a negative response. And so globally, there's a point where there could be so much love there that it discounts it and it's not affecting you physically. Until there's not.
Wow.
And then once that has changed, all of a sudden it's like a switch goes off and your brain literally starts shutting down your muscles. So the analogy I give my patients is when they come in and they're strong and then they get triggered by one of these emotions, their muscles go weak. It's kind of like driving your car with one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake. And that's wear and tear on the car, but that's wear and tear on your body and life. It's the same thing. One part of your brain is saying, go, go, go. The other one's saying, stop, stop, stop.
I mean, think about how many people whose hearts are withered, you know, whose spirits are kind of shut down. They're like, I know I should love my spouse. Yeah. I know I should. But their physiology is being weakened because of this constant battle within.
Yes.
And so you've done clearings on people like that.
Yep.
And then what happened?
And their marriage is better. That's how it always works that way.
Yeah, right, exactly. They got other issues to deal with. But the point I want to make, though, is that's interesting, is because we start to tell ourselves certain things. When you're triggered, pretty soon you start to say, I'm never going to make it. I'm going to fail. Or if I let her down, this thing is over. Where you start to operate in fear. Those are the kind of things you go after,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah. Fear of failure, fear of success, fear of conflict, fear of the unknown, fear of change, all are different things that can creep in there and become problematic. And we see the same things all the time. Not worthy of being loved is a big one. Just the word yes for people who feel overwhelmed. They react to the word yes because they can't handle one more thing. The word no or fear of rejection is another big one that comes in there. And so we see the same things. I will say that when these things happen in life, though, if you express that, because we're meant to express things and talk it out and work through it, it won't necessarily manifest that way within the body. So when we apply the biblical principles of communicating with our spouses, loving your wife like Jesus loved the church, what that looks like for you, now that can resolve it where you won't need the clearings at all. Like it really can, but it doesn't always work that way too. So sometimes it helps people identify what they've missed. Our life is so busy right now that we get triggered all the time or have stressors that we kind of dismiss and we just keep on going. And I think that's a major change from maybe it was busy 2,000 years ago, but I just picture Jesus walking from city to city, and that took 2 weeks sometimes to walk from one town to the other. The amount of time they had to pray and talk to God and just talk amongst themselves and process, I have some jealousy issues around that because I have 30 seconds in between patients or, you know, we have a lot of kids, so, you know, 10 kids, 10, 10 seconds in between
kid.
Each.
Yes.
So there's a lot. There's a lot of time restraints that don't allow for the processing, and so things can accumulate. And so that's what we actually ended up calling it is a accumulation stress disorder.
Oh, you know, I just want to think about this. So maybe your issue isn't a spouse that you're afraid to disappoint. Maybe you've disappointed yourself. Maybe you're your own worst enemy. And, you know, I want you to think about, there are physiological implications of berating yourself.
Yes.
And I just think about that. So you've got this foot on the gas, foot on the brake, where you're kind of telling yourself a contrary message, even though God has wired you for something so much more. And you were to go see Dr. Troy, and he tested some of your physiology, and you showed proved weakness because of what you're doing to yourself. I mean, this is why I marvel at how, you know, integrated we are, mind, body, spirit.
Yes.
God made us fearfully and wonderfully, didn't he?
Yeah, and the body gives us, God gives us feedback through the body all the time. One of the other real common ones is that a lot of mothers have shown their kids that they love them by worrying about them. And worrying is a misuse of your imagination. It really does have a negative impact on our physiology, and so we have to learn to love them differently. Worry does not serve either of you. And so we find that quite a bit as well, where there's a surrendering and just a trusting and a faith step that solves all of the negative physical complications of worry. Worry and fear are the two biggest ones.
Wow. We just got a few minutes left, but maybe say a word. You know, actually, Carissa wrote in and talked about how difficult. We don't have time to answer this. I'm going to give you a minute if you don't mind.
Okay.
But she said, it's so hard for me to visualize because it's all I can do to get through the moment. She's so sick, and it's all she can do to get through the moment. So she's like, I don't know how to even get to that place. What do you say to her?
This is where you have to just have hope, and this is where faith is being tested. It really is. And so with people who can't visualize, sometimes you need help. And so just like the patient I said earlier, he had to get help by recording and watching it. So surround yourself with people who lift you up and do the exact same thing that Pius did where he had his wife show that video to him every single day. What's the equivalent in your life where you can have someone come in and help with that visualization? It's okay to watch it over and over. Print off a picture. If you can't visualize it, then you find a picture of what it looks like. Online or whatever, and that you put it up on the wall, and that's okay to be your visualization until you can do it. And ask for help. Ask God for help. And when you get stuck in life, ask a better question.
Amen and amen. What a powerful show. Thank you, Doc, for joining us today. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you found some encouragement here. And we will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.